The News Round is brought to you by Viagra Connect 50 milligram film coated tablets. Contains sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage 150 milligram tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at viagraconnect.ie. Subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation.
The News Round on Off the Ball. This is News Talk.
Good evening, you're very welcome along to Monday night's Off the Ball. It's Owen here with you till 10 o'clock this evening. And coming up tonight, we're going to be speaking to Pat Ryan and James O'Connor from 8 o'clock to reflect on the weekend's provincial hurling finals. Between 9 and 10 then, we're going to be talking football and we're going to be talking rugby. So Louise Quinn is going to join us from 9 o'clock to whet the appetite for Grenoble tomorrow night. This is a game we're going to have live on the radio for you. Republic of Ireland against France, away to France, and the winner goes to the World Cup next year in Brazil. So Stephen Doyle and Ciara Grant are going to be on commentary duty for that tomorrow night. Louise Quinn, Ireland Centurion, will be with us tonight to preview. And then also that hour, before we wrap up, we're going to bring you Monday Night Rugby with Fiona Hayes. You can drop us a WhatsApp on 087 980 180. And for a day where there's been a lot of genuine hurling chat in the discourse, we've got three genuine hurling men in studio. Will O'Callaghan is your genuine hurling man on News Round. Evening, Will.
Evening.
Arthur O'Dea is your genuine hurling man producer for the evening. Arthur, how are you doing?
Hi.
And arguably chief genuine hurling man has also joined us for the evening. Michael McCarthy, how are you doing?
How are we?
Anyone a little bit annoyed that Graeme Souness is the automatic comparison today for Darragh O'Donovan?
No, because Graeme Souness actually managed to get the flag to stick.
Exactly.
It's been great.
The correct comparison today is Baker Mayfield when he was playing for Oklahoma, planting the flag in the middle of the Ohio State pitch, down on the gridiron turf, the tough Midwest ground, just didn't give to the flag, and that also got flaccid immediately, fell down, everybody stamped on top of it. That is what Darragh O'Donovan did yesterday. The Graeme Souness comparisons need to stop because it just doesn't reflect properly the strength of Graeme Souness, the proper man strength of Graeme Souness to actually get that flag into the Turkish ground. So enough of that already.
Souness planted his feet, which is the crucial part, before he did it. O'Donovan was trying to do it as he was walking by the 21-metre line. I was like, maybe you should just stop for a second. But all credit to the ground staff in Porky Creek. Watching the game on Friday, the amount of rain that came down, apparently it was very wet in Basie Cork all weekend, and somehow the pitch was still strong enough to stand up to a flag.
I kind of feel that this image is going to be important in July one way or another. If you subscribe to the theory that this is chapter 2 of 3 for Limerick against Cork, people will return to this moment, and if Limerick win the All-Ireland, we'll come back to the Darragh O'Donovan flag planting and say, listen, he psychologically crushed Cork with what he did that day. But if Cork managed to win the All-Ireland against Limerick in a final, people will come back to that moment and saying, listen, the moment the flag fell, that was it for Limerick. That was the day Cork actually really got one over on them.
Dog, tell me about that flag moment that I didn't know about till 2 hours after the match. as Will pointed out, not to steal your line, but Darragh O'Donovan has a Cork spouse. Mm. So,
of course,
interesting,
yeah.
Interesting move on his behalf. I would question whether, is it Fenerbahce that Galatasaray were at? Would you take a rabid Fenerbahce crowd? Is that more intimidating than a rabid Rebel crowd in Páirc Uí Chaoimh?
I'd definitely take the Fenerbahce fans over the rabid Rebels, yeah.
Lot of Limerick fans on the pitch at the time, though, forming a protective shield.
Yes.
And then, lastly, not far be it for me to include the league in any kind of a conversation about real hurling. But in this case, I think given the rivalry between these two, I would say it's more chapter 4 or 5 than, because even, especially, well, certainly at least 3 or 4, because I think you do have to include the league final.
You're putting some respect on the Munster Hurling League final here as well.
Maybe I'm not. No, I wouldn't go that far now. I think even these two teams will happily call that one a friendly and move on. But I don't know what you guys think of it, because like there's been a lot of criticism of the game and of various aspects of it, and I'd argue that neither team played particularly well, and that was a sense of size of the occasion, the conditions, maybe the refereeing, that's a lot of the talk. But I also think that it was compelling and thrilling all the way to the end. There was something there was a lot of incidents in the game, and there was a lot of jeopardy, and I'll tell you one thing, it's like, I wasn't the biggest fan of the new Páirc Uí Chaoimh the first couple of times I went down there to half-empty stadiums and so on. Mm. But that has turned into, and it's a credit to the Cork fans really more than anything who keep turning out, but it's turned into like the best place to watch a match, hasn't it?
Yeah. Does it increase your appreciation of the referee's performance yesterday if you're on the side of the referee, that sort of baying crowd, because it feels that the anti-refereeing performance argument is down to the fact that, you know, it was too whistle happy at times, didn't let the game flow at times. But if you're pro the ref, to be able to do that in front of that baying home crowd, as we've said, I think you get extra marks for that.
James Owens was consistent from start to the end of the game. He pulled illegal tackling all the way through, where other referees would have definitely allowed that to go. And I saw the argument that maybe previously Tyler Walsh or particularly John Keenan has allowed some Munster finals to just run. He decided from very early on in the game, I'm going to pull these with an intention to try and stamp down on them. The problem wasn't with the conditions. It meant that we had no flow to the game whatsoever because it was just a complete free fest. It was free after free after free. But you can't argue that James Owens didn't basically lay down the law consistently throughout. The only, I think, decision I had any issue with really was, especially because it happened so soon, after the two Hayeses had wrestled each other at the other end and Cork were given a penalty, when O'Brien and O'Leary were going at the other end, I think both those instances are penalties. I know James Gale and Paul Murphy both disagreed with me last night, but I think if the first one's a pen, the second one definitely is. And also it seems very unusual when Mark Fitzgerald got a black card in the Waterford game against Cork just a few weeks ago, that there was no black card for Kyle Hayes this time around. For an instant, there was almost a carbon copy.
Is every penalty a black card?
No, it shouldn't be necessarily.
But I do think that it's just a foul in the box. It's a grab over the shoulder. It's not given 90% of the time. If you want to give it, give it. I think then you probably have to give the other one. Like, I thought it was finicky, the refereeing performance, Will, I have to say. I know what you're saying. Like, he'll probably be well assessed, but I think people have a general feel for how a game should be refereed. And, you know, if we want to see that many frees in a game, great. I don't think the game will remain as popular as it is. I did think there was a lot of fouling in the game. And there was I do think that should be taken into consideration. A lot of, like, no choice frees were given. I thought a lot of them were like, leave it go. Leave it go another minute. And then a few bad decisions as well. So I can understand where Cork are aggrieved, because I think over the first 60 minutes, it's for both teams. There's no real pattern to it. There's no, it just happened to be a lot of them in the last few minutes went against Cork. But say something as like Dara O'Donovan putting his head down onto the ground, basically almost to drive through, to draw free at the end. It's like, that's really obvious. Everyone in the stadium could see what he was trying to do. I don't understand how a referee 10 yards away can't see it. So there's a lot of that stuff, it felt to me, and this is perhaps unfair, it felt to me as the game got more into the melting pot and things got a little bit feistier, that he had kind of lost control a little bit. And I think a lot of that was because of the standard that you set really early in the game where everything was a free.
Are you pro or anti James Owens after yesterday, Arthur?
I didn't enjoy it. Do you know? I didn't enjoy it, no. it was compelling because of what's on the line. But I don't know how many games I'd be watching of that style of... I don't know how many times I'd want to rewatch that kind of game. It was pretty unremarkable. Do you know what I mean?
You take last year's Munster final pre-injury to Tyler Walsh.
Well, I definitely have. I mean, again, I'm conscious of it as well. Like, I can't speak to it from his point of view, and he obviously acted in the best faith possible from his interpretation of things. But I do think there could be a higher threshold set for what constitutes a foul, maybe, and even allowing for the conditions. With so much kind of slipping and footing going, and like we were talking earlier, like that really kind of odd scene where you're seeing Colin O'Neill really struggle to get the ball to hand from the ground, where this isn't a usual kind of game. I might be an anomaly, the game with the weather, that kind of dictated things, but I certainly didn't enjoy that, no, not personally.
There's a clip you want to bring you here, actually. This is from Off the Ball Breakfast this morning, Dahi Regan talking about Cork, talking about the referee was brilliant. Have a listen.
There's got to be introspection, I guess, from both managers. Cork, that will have stung them. Frankly, I was very, very disappointed with the narrative that was coming out of the Cork camp after the game, because for the first time in a long time, we've seen a referee the game of hurling the way it should be played. The derision that's coming his way, I think, is so unfair. He's not in a position to come out afterwards and talk about it, but he laid his marker down early. What he gave frees for, there were frees. I know Ben O'Connor said there was two instances that he can remember in the game. Well, if how many instances can he remember where his players made mistakes doing the best that they could? Or at what stage does he look at himself and say, I took my corner back off because he was on a yellow card. I got that wrong. But it's easy to come out and nail the referee afterwards. I thought he refed it the way the game of hurling should be refed and the way most referees tend not to do it. I think he came in for an awful lot of stick. I thought he was phenomenal yesterday. I really do.
What did you think of that last play?
He should have played it on. Why should he have played it on? Like, where do you get the right to decide that he should have played it on because we were a point down in a game that we thought we looked like we were going to win it for its entirety? And it's a blow to the solar plexus, a really damaging potential blow to, you know, you've not won the league, you've now not won Munster, and you're preparing for an All-Ireland Championship, and there has to be question marks. But it's not the referee's job, you know, to allow this to go on, to give a draw. His short pass actually wasn't a great pass. It was slightly fumbled, and then it was another pass, and I'm thinking, this is crazy. And he blows it up. And I wasn't one bit surprised he blew it up. There was no justification from the Cork side as to why he should, other than we've lost, let's point the finger at somebody.
Sorry, that is the big call on yesterday. He got the big call right.
Which was which?
To blow it up when he blew it up.
Yeah.
That's at his own discretion. I thought some of the narrative about that after he didn't tell us. You remember that thing a few years ago when England played Italy? And it was Conor, what's his name? Irish guy who was in charge of Italy.
O'Shea.
Conor O'Shea was in charge. And remember, they came up with some sort of plan. I don't know the terminology of it, but it was like they weren't going into rucks or something. Yeah, Italy weren't. Yeah. And England came over to the ref and asked, well, what are we supposed to do? He's like, well, I'm not your coach. I can't tell you that. And I'm not saying it's exactly like for like, but at the same time, I don't understand that type of thing where the ref, you can't come out and say the ref didn't tell us, therefore it's his fault that we didn't execute that last play. It's not like he told you, no, you have time, and you didn't. He didn't lie to you. And I was very careful. I was listening back to a lot of things. They never said he told us it was this and it turned out to be that. He said he didn't tell us it was this. He didn't tell us it was the last thing. So what?
Yeah.
That's at your, like, you have to have some awareness, surely, of looking at the clock and going, we're already, by the time Collins hits it, I'm pretty sure it was already about 2 minutes and a half past the five. And there was allowance for that. That's fine. But, like, come on.
Yeah, it was a slow 5 minutes, so there should have been some extra time. But I think that's a lot of extra time in you're judging it off. You're doing half the 5 minutes. And, like, I think there was a sense that he would let a play develop. If he dropped it in, the ball would have continued. But I think the second short pass was just like, well, what are you doing? Like, time is up. Time has been up for some time at this stage. And that's the third pass. Look, I can understand what Cork were trying to do, but, you know, I did Patrick Horgan send us on the game last night, you just let the play out. I don't know, that could go on for 5 minutes, like, you know. And also, I will just say this, and this is, I am not going to be thrown in Cork stuff, when Clare got an equaliser in the 2013 All-Ireland final, I heard a lot of moaning for many years from Cork about how time should have been up. So, you know, sometimes time's up, like, you know.
But not on that argument. I mean, that
it was way kind of, there wasn't an extra 3 minutes played of the allotted injury time that day.
I think for the sake of everyone, it's probably a good thing that O'Mahony's shot dropped short as well. It would have been a lot messier if that had flown over the crossbar and it had been blown up midway. But anyway,
Paul's been in touch to say Cork players could have asked the ref how long was left or look at the scoreboard clocks like everyone else in the stadium. 5 minutes of injury time announced. Free was awarded in the 76th minute. Keeper takes it into the 77th. Whistle goes in early 78 minutes.
In fairness, the stadium and the clock could just stop at 35, wouldn't it?
You think so?
Yeah, I wouldn't be able to stop.
I am surprised they didn't ask him, though, because there was a big delay before the free.
There was conversation. I know
Sean Stack was there beside Collins.
Yeah.
Before he did it. So, and Sean Stack definitely said something to Collins. I don't know what it was, but I didn't hear that reference afterwards. I don't know if that's where you were going with.
I was going to say, I know what you mean about it's not my place to do your job and so on, right? And that's fine. There is an unwritten rule to it. Do you remember Mayo kicked the point when they were two down against Dublin in the All-Ireland Final 2013, I think? And there was a kind of a sense of, why didn't there, like, Jesus, like, that was a controversy at the time because there was a sense that Killian O'Connor thought that it was another play and there wasn't. Yeah. And because everybody knows that the ref kind of tells you when time's up. So you can't just, even if it's an unwritten rule, still needs consistency. You still need to be able to tell a team, here's what your play is here. And you can't just, like, take it away for certain referees and then others do it, you know?
Sean in Dublin says it's pinned on the dressing room wall already, Owen. I suspect that's a Dara O'Donovan aspect. He also goes on to say Cork lost because they didn't score from play in the second half. That's why they lost. End of. No matter who loses now, the referee is getting the blame. It's absolutely pathetic. Meanwhile, Patrick says, I thought the ref was terrible. He never let the game flow, which made it a poor spectacle. I hope he doesn't get any more games this season.
He's retired this summer, so I was to push him off here, yeah.
And David says, as a Cavan man, I'm neutral, but couldn't take my eyes off the Munster final. The ref blew way too much, but what an ad for our hurling. They'll meet again, I think. Our number is 0879 180 180, and we'll get to that story once again very soon. And after 8 o'clock, we're going to have Pat Ryan and Jamesy O'Connor with us to analyse yesterday and indeed the Leinster final on Saturday. But Will, you are starting with the big developing story this evening in Irish sport.
Yeah, we heard Dan talking about it in the news just a few minutes ago, but Ireland's home Nations League match against Israel is now likely to be played at a neutral venue. The FAI say they won't be commenting again until after their next meeting on Thursday, but it's understood that they're going to seek a switch to Hungary. The teams are due to meet at the Aviva on October the 4th, and Irish football governing body have previously insisted they will fulfil both fixtures with Israel. The FAI's board were meeting earlier today. It's expected they'll now ask UEFA for permission to move that game away from Dublin, believed to be for security concerns, while the association say they don't want to overshadow tomorrow's Women's World Cup qualifier against France. Effectively, their statement earlier was, stop asking us about this.
Yeah, it does feel that this might actually be the worst of both worlds, that now that the situation has been moved to a different country, the ability to protest this fixture, make a bit of noise around this fixture is now removed, because there ain't going to be any Irish people travelling to Hungary who are now in opposition to this fixture, whereas there would have been thousands and thousands of people who would have shown up to Lansdowne Road or Ball's Bridge or whatever the place is where the Israel team would have been staying in this country, whereas there's going to be no fuss made about this now in Hungary. So really, this is not a great solution at all for anybody who's been leading the Stop the Game movement on this. And we're going to be hearing plenty more about this, I suspect, in the next couple of days.
Tomorrow on, so it's obviously going to continue on tomorrow. It seems opposition parties are already going to argue that this isn't moving far enough. There's a couple of press conferences, I think, early tomorrow as well. So this will run throughout tomorrow, even before the FAI go to speak to the government. I would say it's quite telling that all the information this afternoon was coming from political sources, where clearly I would say there are people in government who are already aware that the FAI are going to go and talk to them. And that's where this story broke, as opposed to come from the sports side.
Yeah, it's going to be a solution that I'd imagine UEFA would gladly accept. Mm-hmm. It's like, let's wash our hands of this situation. But certainly the leg that Heimir Hallgrímsson was trying to stand on, I'm not saying it's a strong one at all, was that we'll go out there on the pitch in front of our own fans and beat them. And that's obviously not going to happen. What the situation is with regards to home fans, in inverted commas now, in Hungary, where it's likely to be played, is a massive question. Like, I would not be surprised if there are now going to be more Israel fans.
There will be.
At Ireland's home game against Israel than there will be Ireland fans. Well, which makes a mockery of this whole situation.
There might be a lot of Hungarian Israel fans, you would think, as well. And like, you know, the likelihood of the game that's still set for Tel Aviv taking place in Budapest is very, very strong, if not definite, I would say. So it looks like we're going to be playing Israel twice in Budapest. I kind of don't care, though. Like, again, and it comes back to this constantly with the football side of this is just so small, I would say. And we take sport probably as seriously as anybody, and its importance is, you know, absolutely huge. But, like, this game probably should not be going ahead. And I say that as somebody that I've made the case on air a good few times that I do think the FAI are in an awful position, and that it shouldn't be a football association whose sole remit is the growth and protection of football in this country that have to make this decision, as opposed to governmental bodies who should be, I think, at least leading the way on this, right? Because ultimately the FAI have to be a turkey voting for Christmas if they go against this game, and they have to say we are going to risk serious sanction financially, whether it comes into our hosting of Euro 2028, whether whatever it might be. The world isn't going to stand with Ireland on this one the way we think they will, right? And I do believe that. So I don't think it's as simple as sometimes some of the Stop the Game people say. However, I kind of don't care. The game shouldn't be going ahead. This is not a team we should be playing right now in sport, and it was the same when basketball played them and so on. But football is on a different level, and it's a far bigger statement to play for Ireland to line out against Israel in football.
It's amazing how hot the potato has become ever since it's become a big government involved story. Certainly the way in which the story has leaked out has felt different to your traditional sports story, which would definitely suggest a big governmental involvement. But even the tone of the government, very quick to offload blame onto the FAI, responsibility, I should say, onto the FAI. Even we had Charlie McConnell on the show months ago, and I asked him straight up, are you going to the Israel game? He was like, yes. Last week, no, I'm not going to the Israel game. Just once they realise the severity of the situation, ducks in a row, how do we absolve ourselves of this? And by the way, like, correct decision to not go to the game. Like, what? Once you reach the correct decision, I guess there's a degree of fair play and all that. But it's just so interesting to see how that's just the clarity and the way in which the FAI have been, the spotlight has just turned up a few grades on them in the last couple of weeks. The more serious the situation has become has been very telling.
Yeah, some of the political populism is bad around this as well, though. Like, if you consider that Basketball Ireland found themselves in a position where they said they literally couldn't afford to not play the games because of the fine that they were going to receive. And then last week we had the motion going forward, the idea that, well, let the government pay the FAI's fine if they decide not to play the game. So where was that support for Basketball Ireland last year, which is now there because it's football, because you know it's going to make...
It's what we suggested, you know, and things like, and I think if that had happened, I think it might have happened in response. But as you say, why wasn't it there as an offer in advance? Well, I think ultimately it's because... This is an opposition-led thing. The government want to bury their head in the sand and like let the game go ahead and let there be no disruption without losing any, without it reflecting badly on them.
Yeah,
but I think Owen's initial point to come back to, because we're kind of having an argument about something that's already been there. The what's happened today of the game moving to Budapest. I think how you started by saying it, worst of both worlds. I think that I couldn't agree more. I think what you're having here is that's a move towards this game happening. And it puts players in a worse position, and it puts the people who had the ability to protest this game completely out of the equation. Mm. And I just think it makes things a lot easier for UEFA, for Israel, for the Irish government and for the FAI, but I don't think it helps the situation at all.
No, definitely. So we expect some official confirmation from the FAI over the next couple of days, but as Will said, they don't want to take away from France versus the Republic of Ireland tomorrow evening in Grenoble. Your second story this evening, Will, is the hurling. So you're going to put a bit of meat in the bones when it comes to what the managers were saying.
Yeah, well, the Cork hurling boss Ben O'Connor claims his players weren't told how much time was left by referee James Owens before they went short with that late free in the Munster final. Patrick Collins opted to pass the ball to Mark Coleman, who then played another short pass to Tim O'Mahony, and the full-time whistle blew before he could shoot. O'Connor says they were unaware that the free needed to be a direct shot at goal.
A lot of disappointment, obviously, at the end. The players surrounded the referee. What's your read on that with the last play of the game? Because there was a good bit of time when Tim O'Mahony was down on the ground before that final free.
Yeah, I met some of the boys there and they just said, they said to him, go after field, that he didn't tell them it was the last puck of the ball. You know, I thought normally a referee just said, this is lads, should go direct there, but they said he didn't. So now the boys, when you say surrounded them, that's a little bit much now. They were walking alongside him. His team of officials alongside him, shorts, they were walking alongside him. There was no one raised their voice, they just said, why didn't you tell us? That was the only issue the boys said.
Maybe going for the third pass, Ben, back into Tim O'Mahony. You know, maybe Coleman had that spit chance, you know, after going short with it.
Yeah, against the breeze, big breeze. So, look, yeah, but if you were told, you know, maybe the third pass wouldn't be there, then you'd know in your head, like, so.
Yeah. I spoke with William O'Donoghue outside and he said he was told that it was the last shot.
Which is great that he was told, and we weren't told when we got the free, it was brilliant that they told him. Fair play to whoever told him.
I have to say I'm enjoying Ben O'Connor this year, all the way through the league and everything like that. It's good copy, as we say.
Gavin's been in touch just on the Ireland fixture story to say, I'd have been okay with a refusal to play Israel, but always felt that a full Aviva with Irish players and fans all in Palestinian colours, with Palestinian songs being sung by the crowd for 90 minutes, would have gained global media attention and might have been a worse result for Israel. Like you say, Hungary seems the worst possible option. Our number is 0879 180 180. You're bringing us some of the other side of things from Páirc Uí yesterday, Will?
Yeah, the Limerick manager John Kiely insisted after the game his players weren't motivated by revenge in the final, having lost to Cork on penalties in the decider last year. Limerick then landed their seventh McMackie Cup in 8 seasons. Peter Casey hit the winning point. He hit the last 2 scores for Limerick. He spoke to Tommy Rooney after the game about their motivation going into the final.
Yeah, I suppose, listen, was it on our minds today? Probably not. Like, but listen, that hurt is always going to be there. Listen, I suppose when you lose a Munster final in your own backyard, you know, it does hurt. And I suppose it was probably in the back of our minds more than anything else. I suppose every day we go out, we're just looking to try and get our best performance out of us. And I suppose, listen, it was obviously huge to come down here to Cork and be Cork in your own backyard for a Munster final. It doesn't get much sweeter than that. Like, so yeah, I suppose it was one to cherish. And I suppose that's why you probably saw the outpouring of emotion afterwards, which was just special, I suppose.
It felt like a cracker to watch. And maybe the second half was a little bit stop-start, but it just felt like such a brilliant occasion, a sellout. What was it like the playing? Because the conditions were so tough as well.
Yeah, it was probably a bit frustrating more than anything else. It was probably just a bit stop-start, I thought, especially in the second half. There was probably no real flow to the game more than anything else. I suppose neither team could probably get a flow or get a purple patch as such, because it was probably a lot of freezing stuff. But listen, I suppose, listen, sometimes those days just come around, and it's just about grinding and trying to stick to your process and try and get the best foot forward. And thankfully we do. I think we got a huge impact again off our bench for the last 10-15 minutes. So yeah, I think just absolutely delighted, I think, just to get over the line more than anything else.
We have some detail on the All-Ireland quarterfinals.
We do. We wait all day to find out what's going to happen. So Saturday week, it's going to be Clare against Dublin, first of the quarterfinals in Semple Stadium, 7 p.m. Back to Thurles for the second semi-final on the following day. So on the Sunday, it's going to be 3:30 for Offaly against Cork.
Okay, how do you feel about that? Clare fixture?
Well, I have to go to a bloody gig that Saturday night, so it's annoying.
Who's Ben?
Metallica.
Florence and the Machine.
Oh,
it was a Christmas present for someone, so I have to be after
that. Someone,
my wife, yeah.
For you.
Anyway, maybe one of our friends might want to go.
And we did not move the Clare fixture, no.
Well, I thought we might be on Sunday. I don't know. I'm disaster of a year for not being able to go to matches. But you know, we'll see what happens. We watched it on my phone.
Just before we go to the break, you might fill us in on the details from Saturday in terms of hurling.
Yeah, so the other side, Galway, the Leinster hurling champions, they got their first victory at Croke Park since 2020. Darren Neary, Aaron Nyland, John Fleming and Conor Cooney with the goals as they beat Dublin very handsomely, 4:29 to 4:15. The reward for the Trisman is a direct route now to the All-Ireland semi-finals, while Dublin will have to regroup for that quarter-final with Clare. The Galway boss, Micheál Donoghue, said after the game it was a professional performance from his team.
I think we've had lots of good performances. I think we're no different to other teams, and we're striving for consistency over the 70 minutes. I think we started well, and we just had the cushion, I suppose. You know, even when Grillo got sent off, and yes, Donald took the penalty well, and I think we went back up and got the next score, and that just probably settled it a bit. Like, so, yeah, look, it was a good performance, but we still look for more. As I said, today was just about today, and trying to get that really good performance and ultimately getting the win, which we've done that. The big plus for us, as you said, is we've a month now to get some of the bodies right and get good preparation again. But look, today and tonight is letting the boys celebrate it, like, and then we'll get at it again midweek. Yeah, look, just I suppose the penalty in the black card is a big penalty, do you know what I mean, to take, like, and I don't know, what were we up? Were we 6 or 7 at the time when the penalty, or maybe a bit more, but like, it's a big decision, do you know what I mean? And I said my initial reaction, you know, and obviously we were 70, 80 yards away, we thought it was outside, like, so it's a big punishment for the crime and something like that, maybe where there is bodies back. So it's a big call, like, so look, thankfully it hadn't too much of a detrimental effect on it.
And then finally, we'll on the hurling front, a good weekend for Laois.
It was, yeah, it was a horrific final, the Joe McDonagh Cup final. Carlo were sorry for
wides,
I was going to say sorry for editorialising, but yeah, it was just a poor final overall. It was a good day for Killian Dunn, though. In his first year on the Laois panel, he got 1-6 in the final. Liam Moore's won 127 to 118, but like, we heard from Pat Bennett, the Carlo manager, afterwards, and he spoke to Stephen Gleeson, and he was just saying they've never had a day in Championship this year or in the league where they've hit as many wayward shots as they did. Scored 18 goals across the round robin, and the goals just dried up after the first minute of that game. So Laois go back to the Leinster Championship for next season. Carlo will have another year in the Joe McDonagh. Laois had lost the last two finals, so they were due.
Okay, more to come from Will in the news round. Our next story involves the Republic of Ireland, a crucial match with France tomorrow in Grenoble. We'll also be checking in with Stephen Doyle, who's over there, and hearing from the manager, Carla Ward. The news round is brought to you by Viagra Connect. 50 milligram film-coated tablets contain sildenafil for adult men with erectile dysfunction. Maximum dosage, 1 50 mil tablet per day. Always read the label. Buy online at Viagra Connect, subject to suitability following pharmacist consultation. Now, time for the cash machine.
The news round on Off the Ball.
You are welcome back. We've got Will O'Callaghan and Arthur O'D and Michael McCarthy here in studio. We'll check in with Stephen Doyle in France in just a moment, but set the scene for us, Will, tomorrow a huge moment potentially for Irish sport.
Yeah, and look, the good news for the Republic of Ireland as well, Ruaisín Lilljohn didn't train today, but generally she manages her Achilles anyway. The rest of the squad able to train, so no fresh injury concerns after the win against the Netherlands on Friday night. And Republic of Ireland boss Carlo Ward says a win against France tomorrow will be one of the biggest stories in world football. Victory in Grenoble would see Ireland top the qualification group and seal a place directly for the World Cup in Brazil. This is what Ward had to say about the possibility of automatic qualification at a press conference earlier today.
Look, I expect the French to come after us. I don't expect the French to underestimate us at all. I think they were really respectful when we played them last time, and we have to manage every single moment going. So we'll put it this way, we'll leave no stone unturned. We'll have conversations tonight, and we'll bring that to life of how we'll react to those feelings. First of all, no matter what happens tomorrow night, this group can be incredibly proud of what we've achieved so far, and that is number one, and it's important that we don't lose sight of actually the development of the group. Of course, we want to go and win the game. We wanted to win the game the other night, and we made sure we did. How big it would be, I think you would all agree, it would be one of the biggest sporting stories in world football, because no pot four team stays in Ligue 1, let alone wins two games and then wins three games and then wins the group. We've already written our own records, and this would be the biggest one, no doubt about it.
Our own Stephen Doyle was at their press conference as well. Now we have him on in a second, but he asked goalkeeper Courtney Brosnan about how the players are feeling to be in such a position in the group.
It feels amazing. I think obviously we've said it a million times, being in Ligue 1 is where we want to be. But as you said, when you're in Ligue 1, the competition and the quality of teams is right there at the top, and that's who we want to be playing against. So I think it's unbelievable, obviously, what we've been able to do to be in this position, and we're looking to continue that on Tuesday.
And just how important is your role tomorrow, just to bring a sense of calm to your defence?
Yeah, I think obviously as a keeper you get used to that. I think I've talked about it loads that as a keeper I want to do whatever I can to help the team, whether that's making no saves or one saves or 10 saves, whatever it is, I'll be ready. And I think we have just such a united, strong team and squad. And when we step out on the pitch, we'll obviously give everything to get the result.
It is an 8 p.m. kickoff tomorrow evening at Stade des Alpes in Grenoble. It's Stephen Doyle and Ciara Grant on commentary. We'll be able to hear the game live here and off the ball on News Talk. Stephen Doyle is standing by in France. Steve-O, how are you doing?
I'm doing very well, Owen.
It's amazing how quick this has all kind of happened. I think maybe, I wouldn't say we were all pessimistic about the Republic of Ireland's chances in this group, but certainly the expectation was not that Ireland might be in with a shout of topping this group come the final match day of this. So suddenly, comparing how we were feeling about this last Thursday morning to this evening, we've been thrust into this position of getting ready for a potentially historic moment. It's amazing how quickly things change in sport.
Yeah, and they've already made history with the result on Friday night. I have to say, I would have been not pessimistic about the Netherlands game, but the fact that Ireland were missing two of their key players, Emily Murphy, who's been the best player in the campaign, this qualifying campaign, and then, of course, Denise O'Sullivan, who's been in really, really excellent form for our country over the last 12 to 18 months. So to be missing those two players and to be heading in against the team ranked 11th in the world in the Netherlands, 10 places above Ireland, they've beaten France and drawn with France already in the group. I didn't really give Ireland, I didn't give them a chance, but I would have, I'm definitely looking logically at this here, thinking the Netherlands should win this match. So for Ireland to create history by winning a huge, huge game like that, I think they've set themselves up really nicely. And you're alluding almost to the momentum of this team, and they are a momentum team under Carlo Ward. Like we saw in the last Nations League campaign, and they got off with a decent win, but then lost that next match against Slovenia, that 4-0 defeat, which was, I suppose, the result that really kind of shook Carlo Ward and the team back in February of last year. But then they built momentum throughout that campaign, and they went on to the playoff against Belgium, won the home match, albeit losing the away leg in that tie against Belgium, but still got themselves into League A. So they've shown already that they are a momentum side, and they're really in a good sense of momentum here in this group, having won the last three matches going into this France game, which Carlo Ward herself said there's no pressure on them going into this match.
I am trying to figure out what's going on outside your hotel window there. You're in the south of France, you're in Grenoble, but it looks like it might actually be grey skies and something resembling last Friday night in Cork.
I was worried. I thought there might have been a window cleaner coming down beside me there as I was speaking to you.
Batman or Robin.
The windows are very clean. It's quite a run-down kind of a city, I have to say. Grenoble, it's, I'm sure there's a lot of rugby fans out there who might have been down this part of the world who would be quite familiar with it. Listen, Joe, something on. It was an absolute scorcher today. We went down to the stadium, the Stade des Alpes, it's called. What was it, around 10 o'clock this morning for the pre-match press conference. And it was an absolute scorcher. It was up to about 30 degrees, I think, today. As the day wore on, then it got a little bit dull and cloudy while still warm. Like, because of where the city is situated in the country, and it's right at the foot of the Alps, you're kind of surrounded by the Alps almost. The air doesn't really flow through it, so it's quite clammy, quite warm. But it got a bit dull. We got a bit of rain. And then I'm looking at the forecast for tomorrow, and it looks like it's going to be in around 18, 19 degrees. So that kind of heat that we were experiencing earlier in the day, I don't think it's going to be a big factor for tomorrow night's game. So it looks okay for the Irish team. Now, they were training today. We got to see most of the training session. Really, really hot. So I think they might... I say it was a light enough training session, although one of the best parts of training was in the early parts of the session where they were kind of doing the 1-2 touch stuff. They throw about three or four players in the middle and they're doing all the 1-2 touch passing. My God, really quick, really fast. And you know something about this team, I have to say, and it's something I was kind of noticing as they're doing this particular drill. We often get kind of hurt and offended by opposition coaches, whether it be with the men's or the women's team, talking about Irish teams, play with great spirit, great fight, great passion, all that kind of stuff. This team knows how to play football. Like, whatever about that kind of fight and passion that they do show, and we saw it on Friday night against the Dutch when Ireland didn't have the ball. My God, they can play football. And not just the passing, which is pretty, pretty accurate, but it's also the way they can play under pressure and in tight spaces. And I think that drill was a real example of that. Yeah, it certainly bodes well for tomorrow, I think.
Steve-O, can I ask you what the sense is about the team from the press conference today? Because this really interesting situation where you mentioned Emily Murphy and Denise O'Sullivan coming back into the team. And obviously Denise is Denise and Emily Murphy has been Ireland's most effective player in this campaign. But Abby Larkin put in one of the best performances I've ever seen in an Irish shirt on Friday night, like, and was player of the match, and obviously scored, set up a goal, and just was her all-round. Like, funny enough, I think she scored and set up a goal, and I don't think either of them would have been in the highlights of what she did in the game, because her performance all-round and the way she would win the ball back and everything like that was unbelievable. It's kind of remarkable that we're in a position where she's likely going to be going back to the bench for this huge game tomorrow night.
Yeah, it's. I suppose if she does go back to the bench, it again kind of highlights that there is a bit of depth in this Irish squad now, Mick, at this stage. Like, you know, there are certainly players who can come off the bench, whether it's Abby Larkin or Emily Murphy who are on the bench. There are going to be players who can come off the bench in the second half of this game tomorrow and provide real quality for the Irish team. We saw it on Friday night with the likes of Saoirse Noone and Jess Sue coming off the bench. They provided some real quality when they came on as well against the Dutch. But I think that's going to be her toughest decision, Carla Ward, that is, when she picks her team for tomorrow night. She tends to stick with the same 11 when she can. She doesn't tend to make too many changes. And I feel because Emily Murphy has been the player of the campaign, she's been absolutely sensational. And also because herself and Denise O'Sullivan are fresh legs, essentially, because they didn't play because they were suspended on Friday night. Those suspensions, like, we were all clutching our pearls when we knew they were going to be suspended for that game on Friday night, thinking we've got no chance with these two players. But now it's been a blessing in disguise. They've got fresh legs. They're going to be in prime condition now to start this game against the French. I think that's the reason why she might go with those two. That said, I was speaking to our co-commentator, Ciara Grant, who's going to be on air with us tomorrow night for the game. I just met up with her about an hour ago for a little chat. And she kind of gets the feeling that Abby Larkin will be really gunning to start this game tomorrow and feels that she has a good chance to start the game tomorrow. So, yeah, look, it's definitely going to be the biggest headache for Carla Ward before she picks her team.
Okay, Steve, what is the plan for this evening? How are you going to enjoy the sights and sounds of Grenoble?
Well, it's a good question. I've got most of my prep work done at this stage. I've got the French team all sorted out. I've got the Irish team all sorted out. So we'll go for a bite to eat and maybe meet up with the Irish press pack beforehand. Ciara Grant has gone off for an early night. So look, we're guaranteed that at least one of us will be well rested this evening. So no, I'm joking. I'm going to have an early night tonight, lads, because I want to get up and see. I actually didn't get to see much of the city today because there was so much work going on. So I want to get out and maybe do a cable car ride. So very I good. Don't think going hard at it tonight will be a good idea if I'm going to be going up at very high heights tomorrow night. Yep. Or tomorrow afternoon.
Oh, hopefully tomorrow night as well. And potentially tomorrow night. There you go. Yeah, the commentary lines write themselves. Stephen Doyle, thanks a million for joining us. You'll hear plenty more from Steve-O and from Ciara Grant. Kickoff tomorrow night at 8 p.m. You're going to hear the game live here on Off the Ball. Will O'Callaghan, where are we going next?
Galway and Dublin in Cork. Galway and Dock, I should say, in Cork even, which was not a headline I was expecting to be saying. It was confirmed earlier today that Friday's SSC or Tristy League Premier Division match between Galway United and Dundalk will now be played at Turner's Cross. So again, that writes its own headline that there will be Premier Division football at Turner's Cross this season. With the ongoing pitch works at Eamon DC Park, the game had been originally fixed for Pearce Stadium in Salt Hill. That's now unavailable because of Westmead against Galway in the All-Ireland football next weekend. The first game to be played at the home of Galway GAA for Galway United will be the game against Derry City on Friday week. The club released a statement a little bit earlier saying they made every effort to try and play the game around Galway, but they couldn't get an appropriate venue.
Now then, very sad news coming out of Irish rugby.
Yeah, the former chief executive of the RFU, Philip Brown, has passed away at the age of 66. He oversaw Irish rugby's move into the professional era, 23 years in charge as CEO, took over in 1998, retired just after the pandemic in 2021. Under his tenure, Ireland won 4 Six Nations championships, and of course, Lansdowne Road was redeveloped during that period as well.
Yeah. It's really sad news, really shocking, I think, for someone that's kind of been in the fore of Irish sport for so long and at such an age. And, so obviously we wish his family and condolences and everything like that. Just from a kind of a pure sporting point of view, though, when we used to, when we lived through the, FAI banter years and, there was always ups and downs with the GAA and so on as well. There was always this sense that the IRFU with Philip Brown have their house in order, and we hear very little from them. And look at that, look at the way Irish rugby has grown. And if you take his tenure from 1998 until the early 2020s, what happened in Irish rugby in that time, And he set a lot of the groundwork up for it and then executed it all the way through. This is one of the most successful and most important administrators in Irish sport history.
Yeah, 100%. On to Leinster, Will. Leinster and Bulls, they have a fixture in Croke Park, a pretty big one at that.
They do, and Leo Cullen has been urging the fans to come along for their game against the Bulls. They overcame the Stormers in what he called an arm wrestle on Saturday night. The defending champions overcame their first bunch of South African opponents by 20 points to 11 at the Aviva. Around 16,000 people were watching that game, while the Bulls edged out Glasgow by 22 points to 21. It sets up a repeat of last year's decider. Leinster set to take on the Bulls at Croke Park on Friday week. And this is what Cullen had to say about the potential crowd at the final.
Fans will travel here. That's the thing around numbers. Obviously, away fans play their part. But yeah, listen, hopefully we have a huge crowd there. It was an amazing occasion last year, and hopefully it'll be something similar. But there was that anticipation. I still remember the anticipation, some of the first contacts in the game and what that was like. So yeah, listen, hopefully the fans get out in numbers again, because this was an amazing day to be part of, and hopefully Friday week will be something similar.
We'll have plenty more on this with Fiona Hayes later on. She's coming up from 9:30. And by the way, there's a brilliant preview tomorrow night in Grenoble coming up with Louise Quinn from 9 p.m. this evening. On to the tennis then, Will.
Yeah, Alexander Zverev admits that he faced struggles en route to his first ever Grand Slam tennis title. The second seed won the French Open yesterday. He edged out a 5-set thriller against Flavio Cabolli in the end. He becomes the first German man to win a Grand Slam singles title since Boris Becker some 30 years ago. Mira Andreeva also winning her maiden Grand Slam tennis title as well. The teenager beat the qualifier Mina Wilinski in the end in straight sets at the French Open final on Saturday, 6-3, 6-2. And Andreeva is the youngest winner at Roland Garros since Monica Seles back in 1992.
You have Tottenham Cup fixtures.
We do, yeah. Repeated the 2024 final coming up in the quarterfinals this weekend. That's Leash against Down on Saturday afternoon. Fermanagh's reward for their preliminary quarterfinal win against New York was a home clash against Sligo in the last eight. Offaly will welcome Wexford to Tullamore. That's the 1 p.m. game this coming Saturday. And Wicklow will make the trip to play against Antrim.
On to the Camogie then.
Cork opened up their All-Ireland Senior Camogie Championship campaign with a win on the weekend just gone by. Their game was on Saturday. They came out on top in a repeat of last year's All-Ireland final against Galway, 18-1. All the teams will qualify from Group 1 with the structure this year. So the beaten league finalist Waterford held on to overcome Tipperary yesterday by 16-10. In Group 2, it's where they're fighting it out for the places in the quarterfinals. Clare made it 3 wins from 3, 113-11 against Limerick. So the Banner are now destined for a quarterfinal spot. Kilkenny beat Offaly by 12 points, which boosts their chances of getting into the knockout stages. And Dublin were 13-point winners against Wexford. While in the ladies' football at the weekend, two goals from Niamh Heatherton, giving the defending champions Dublin a winning start to their All-Ireland ladies' football campaign. They beat Mayo and Castlebar 3-12. Meath, who were the beaten All-Ireland finalists from last year, were beaten by Galway 2-21. And Amy Macken got a hat-trick in the TV game on Saturday as Armagh beat Cork in the end 4-10.
Very worrying news then yesterday evening around Christian Eriksen.
Yeah, well, it's an upbeat update from himself today, though. He said this evening he's doing well and he's at home with his family after collapsing while playing for Denmark against Ukraine last night. The former Tottenham and Manchester United midfielder was taken to hospital after briefly losing consciousness on the pitch. Eriksen previously suffered a cardiac arrest, as you remember, on the pitch at Euro 2020, but he posted on the social media today that it's a different situation from what happened to him in 2021.
We are a week and a half away from the US Open at Shinnecock. Rory McIlroy's been out.
He has, yeah. He was speaking about what happened to him at the Memorial. He admits he has been limited off the tee in the last while, says he's got some work to do to be ready for the US Open next week. The Masters champion finishing in a share of 12th place last night. He had issues with his driver, though, all weekend. Across the week, he hit only 30 of 56 fairways from the tee, and McIlroy says he needs to improve that in the coming week.
Two steps forward, one step back. Actually felt like I played some of my best golf on Friday afternoon, and we just got tough conditions, and it was just hard coming in. And then yesterday felt like I left a few out there, and then today as well after the fast start, you know, it would have been nice to keep that going, but didn't quite wasn't quite able to keep the momentum that I had on that front nine. And but overall, like, not a bad week. Got some good stuff out of it, and you know, I've got a week to prep and get ready for Shinnecock.
The Irish players missed the cut at the US Women's Open on Friday night, but the world number one Nelly Korda has won the US Open for the first time, pipping Charlie Hull to victory by a single shot last night. The American posted a 200 par final round of 69, was just one shot ahead of the chasing pack in the end. Hull's wait for a first major continues after ending up joint second in California, and that is now her fifth time to be a runner-up at a major.
And then finally, the coast is clear for Jose.
It really is, yeah. He's set to be reappointed as the Real Madrid manager for a second time following Florentino Perez getting re-elected as president last night. The former Chelsea and Manchester United boss has agreed a three-year contract. It was agreed last month, but then Perez had to get re-elected. Perez himself has promised to bid €150 million tomorrow to try and attract another Galactico to the Spanish capital. Bayern Munich have been out ahead of that story, saying if it's Michael Elise, he's not moving, even if they do bid 150.
Mourinho, said it wasn't Elise, though.
Yeah, he did during the weekend. But
it's Kvaratskhelia, I presume.
I would think so. He's the only one that really fits
another
the
left winger, like, you know. That's,
yeah. He's indicated it's an attacker, it's not Premier League, and it's a team who are in the Champions League. And then I think he just enjoyed the questions right before the election. He went, is it this person? No. Is it Harry Kane? No. So I don't know. Elise was the one that kind of fit the profile.
He said it was a midfielder / forward.
Yeah.
And not in the Premier League. It can only be, couldn't it? It's like Doué or something, but I don't think Doué would fit the profile, would he?
I wonder if anyone in PSG would be all that attracted in going to Real Madrid, even if they do maybe move you to a bigger house.
It would be Dembele. He wouldn't do it, would he?
No.
No.
I don't think so. I'm trying to think.
This is what Real Madrid do better than anyone else, let's face it. Like, they're, you know, let's face it, for all intents and purposes, a horrible club.
Yeah.
But, you know, we get this kind of crack out of them. Like, every couple of years, it's like, who are they going to sign to not improve their team at all because they've got two of the best players in the world who already play in that exact position?
And you can't help but think quite a few clubs on Friday night were going, uh-oh.
Yeah,
definitely. He's coming, and he's coming with cash.
Will O'Callaghan, thank you very much for tonight's news round. Mick and Arthur, thank you for popping in. We'll have plenty more hurling as well after 8 o'clock with James E. O'Connor and former Cork manager Pat Ryan joining us. We'll take one last quick break for this hour.